Your margarita's frozen or on the rocks. This isn't no fancy place, so you don't have many choices, Judy tells me. I said I didn't want a fucking drink, I snap. Her eyes widen, but she recovers quickly. I'm almost as surprised by my outburst as she is. I hear Harden chuckle next to me, but I keep my eyes on this woman who clearly enjoys her secrets. Okay, then. Someone needs to relax. She digs her hands into her purse. She pulls out a pack of cigarettes and a lighter from the oversized bag and lights up. Smoke? She asks Harden. I look at him, and to my surprise, he nods. Judy reaches behind me to hand him the lit cigarette from her mouth. Who the hell is this woman? The disgusting stick is placed between Harden's lips, and he takes a puff. Tendrils of smoke swirl between us, and I cover my mouth and nose. I glare at him. Since when do you smoke?
I've always smoked, just not since I started at WCU.
He takes another drag. The glowing red fire at the end of the cigarette taunts me, and I reach over and snatch it from Harden's mouth and drop it into his half-full glass.
What the fuck?
He half-yells and stares down at his ruined drink. We are leaving. Now. I step down from the bar stool, grabbing hold of Harden's sleeve and pulling at him.
No, we aren't.
He twists away from my grip and attempts to get the bartender's attention.
He doesn't want to leave, Judy chimes in.
My anger is boiling, and this woman is just pissing me off. I stare deep into her mocking eyes, which I can barely find through the anthill of mascara she's caked on. I don't remember asking you. Mind your own business and find a new drinking partner, because we are leaving, I shout. She looks at Harden, expecting him to defend her, and then the sick history between the two of them comes to me. This isn't the way a friend of the family would behave with the son of her friend who is half her age.
I said I don't want to leave,
Harden insists. I've pulled out all the stops here, and he isn't listening. My last option is to play on his jealousy. A low blow, especially in the state he's in, but he's left me no other choice.
Well, I say as I begin scanning the bar exaggeratedly. If you won't take me back to the hotel, I will have to find someone else to do it.
My eyes settle on the youngest man in the place who is at a table with his friends. I give Harden a few seconds to respond, and when he doesn't, I begin walking toward the group of young men. Harden's hand is around my arm in mere seconds.
Hell no, you won't.
I spin around, taking note of the barstool he's knocked over in his haste to reach me, and Judy's ridiculously uncoordinated attempts to get it back upright.
Then take me back, I reply with a tilt of my head.
I'm wasted,
he says, as if that justifies this whole scene. I know. We can call a cab to take us to Gabriel's, and I'll drive the rental to the hotel. Inside, I say a little prayer that this ruse will work. Harden squints at me for a second.
You've got it all figured out, don't you?
He mumbles sarcastically. No, but staying here isn't doing a bit of good, so either you go pay for your drinks and take me out of here, or I will leave with someone else. He releases his light grip on my arm and steps close.
Don't you threaten me. I could just as easily leave with someone else,
he says, only inches from my face. A sting of jealousy pains me, but I ignore it. Go ahead. Go home with Judy, then. I know you slept with her before, I can tell. I keep my back straight and my voice steady as I challenge him. He looks at me, then to her, and smiles a little. I flinch and he frowns.
It wasn't anything too impressive. I barely remember it.
He's attempting to make me feel better, but his words have the opposite effect. Well, what's it going to be? I raise my brow.
Damn it.
He grumbles, then half stumbles back to the bar to pay for his drinks. It looks like he just empties his pockets on the bar, and after the bartender extracts some bills, he shoves the rest in Judy's direction. She looks at him, and then over at me, sinking a little as if something has deflated her spine. As we exit the bar, Harden says,
Judy says bye.
And it makes me want to explode. Don't talk to me about her, I snap.
Are you jealous, Teresa?
He slurs, wrapping his arm around me.
Fuck, I hate this place. This bar. That house.
He gestures toward the small house across the street.
Oh, you want to know something funny? Vance lived there.
Hardin points to the brick house directly next to the bar. A dim light is on upstairs and a car is parked in the driveway.
I wonder what he was doing the night that those men came into our fucking house.
Hardin's eyes scan the ground and he bends down. Before I realize what's happening, his arm is raised behind his head, a brick in his hand. Hardin, no! I yell and grab his arm. The brick falls to the ground and skids across the concrete.
Fuck this.
He tries to reach for it, but I stand in front of him.
Fuck all of this. Fuck the street. Fuck this bar and that fucking house. Fuck everyone.
He stumbles again and walks into the street.
If you won't let me destroy that house.
His voice trails off, and I pull my shoes from my feet and follow him across the street and into the front yard of his childhood home. Chapter 6. Tessa. I trip over my bare feet while rushing behind Hardin into the front yard of the house where he spent his painful childhood. One of my knees lands on the grass, but I quickly steady myself and get back on my feet. The front screen door is pulled open, and I hear Hardin fumbling with the doorknob for a moment before he pounds his fist against the wood in frustration. Hardin, please, let's just go to the hotel, I try to convince him as I approach. Ignoring my presence completely, he bends down to grab something from beside the porch. I assume it's a spare key, but I'm quickly proven wrong when a fist-sized rock is pushed through the glass pane on the center of the door. Hardin snakes his arm through, thankfully avoiding the sharp ridges of the broken glass, and unlocks the door. I look around the quiet street, but nothing seems amiss. No one is outside to notice our disruption, and no lights have flickered on at the sound of the breaking glass. I pray that Trish and Mike aren't staying next door at Mike's house tonight, that they've gone off to some fancy hotel for the night, given that neither of them are well off enough to go on an extravagant honeymoon. Hardin, I'm walking on water here, trying my hardest to keep from sinking under. One slip-up and we both will drown.
This fucking house has been nothing but a tormentor of mine, he grumbles, stumbling over his boots.
He catches himself on the arm of a small couch before he falls. I survey the living room, and I'm grateful that most of the furnishings have been packed into boxes or have already been removed from the house in preparation for the demolition following Trish's move. He narrows his eyes and focuses on the couch.
This couch here.
He presses his fingers against his forehead before finishing.
That's where it happened, you know? That exact same fucking couch.
I knew he wasn't in his head, but his saying that confirms it. I remember him telling me months ago that he'd destroyed that couch. That piece of shit was easy to shred, he bragged. I looked at the couch before us, the newness of it evident by the stiff cushions and unmarked fabric. My stomach turns, both over the memory and the thought of what this mood of Hardin's is building up to. His eyes close momentarily.
Maybe one of my fucking fathers could have thought to buy a new one.
I'm so sorry. I know this is so much for you right now. I try to comfort him, but he continues to ignore me. He opens his eyes and walks into the kitchen, and I follow a few feet behind.
Where is it?
He mumbles and drops to his knees to look inside the cabinet under the kitchen sink.
Gotcha.
He holds up a bottle of clear liquor. I don't want to ask whose liquor it was or is and how it got there in the first place. Given the thin layer of dust that appears on Hardin's black T-shirt when he rubs the bottle against the fabric, I'd say it's been hiding in there for at least a few months. I follow him as he returns to the living room, unsure of what he will do next. I know you're upset, and you are completely justified to be angry. I stand in front of him in a desperate attempt to gain his attention. He refuses to even glance down at me. But can we please go back to the hotel? I reach for his hand, but he pulls away. We can talk, and you can sober up. Please. Or you can go to sleep. Whatever you want. But please, we need to leave here. Hardin ducks around me and walks to the couch, pointing.
She was here.
He points to the couch with the bottle of liquor. My eyes prick with tears, but I swallow them down.
And no one came to fucking stop it. Neither of those fuck-ups.
He spins and twists the top off the full bottle. He presses the bottle to his lips and tips his head back, gulping the liquor down. "Enough!" I shout, stepping closer to him. I'm fully prepared to yank that bottle right from his hands and shatter it against the kitchen tile. Anything so he doesn't drink it. I don't know how much more alcohol his body can stand before he passes out. Harden takes another swig before stopping. He uses the back of his hand to wipe the excess liquor from his mouth and chin. He grins and looks at me for the first time since we entered this house.
"Why? You want some?"
"No. Yes. Actually, I do," I lie.
"Too bad, Tessie. There isn't enough to share,"
he slurs, holding up the large bottle. I cringe at the use of my father's nickname for me. It has to be over a liter of whatever liquor it is. The label is worn and half torn. I wonder how long ago he hid it there. Was it during those worst 11 days of my entire life?
"I bet you're loving this."
I take a step back and try to think of a plan of action. I don't have many options right now, and I'm becoming a little frightened. I know he would never physically hurt me, but I don't know how he'll treat himself, and I'm not emotionally prepared for another lashing from him. I've gotten too used to the somewhat controlled Harden that I've been graced with lately. Sarcastic and moody, but no longer hateful. The gleam in his bloodshot eyes is all too familiar to me, and I can see the malice brewing behind them. "Why would I be loving this? I hate seeing you this way. I never want you to be hurting like this, Harden." He smiles and softly chuckles before lifting the bottle and pouring some liquor onto the couch cushions.
"Did you know that rum is one of the most flammable of spirits?"
he says darkly. My blood runs cold. "Harden, I..."
"This rum here is 100 proof. That's pretty damn high."
His voice is hazy, slow, and frightening as he continues to douse the couch. "Harden," I exclaim, my voice growing louder. "What are you going to do then? Burn the house down? That isn't going to change anything." Waving a dismissive hand toward me, he sneers.
"You should go. No kids allowed."
"Don't talk to me like that." Feeling brave and slightly afraid, I reach for the bottle and grip the handle. Harden's nostrils flare and he tries to loosen my grip.
"Let go of it. Now,"
he says through his teeth. "No."
"Tessa, don't push me."
"What are you going to do, Harden? Fight me over a bottle of alcohol?" His eyes go wide. His mouth opens in surprise when he looks at both of our hands playing tug of war. "Give me the bottle," I demand, tightening my grip on the handle of the large bottle. It's heavy, and Harden isn't making it any easier, but my adrenaline is pumping, giving me the strength I need. Cursing under his breath, he pulls his hand away. I didn't expect him to give in that easily, so as his weight is removed, the bottle slips from my hand and topples to the floor in front of us, spilling onto the aged wood. I reach for it as I suggest the opposite. "Leave it there."
"I don't see the big deal here."
He grabs the bottle before I can and pours more liquor onto the couch, then walks in a circle around the room, leaving a trail of flammable rum behind him.
"This shithole is going to be demolished anyway. I'm doing the new owners a favor."
He looks at me and shrugs playfully.
"This is probably cheaper anyway."
I slowly turn away from Harden and reach into my purse to find my phone. The battery warning symbol is flashing, but I pull up the only number that could possibly help us at this point. Keeping the phone in my hand, I turn back to Harden. "The police will come to your mother's house if you do this. You will get arrested, Harden. I pray that the person on the line can hear me."
"Don't give a fuck,"
he mumbles, his jaw clenched. He looks down at the couch, his eyes piercing the present to stare into the past.
"I can still hear her screaming. Her cries sounded like a wounded fucking animal. Do you know what that sounds like to a little boy?"
My heart aches for Harden, for both versions of him. The innocent little boy who was forced to watch his mother beaten and violated, and the angry, hurt man who feels like his only recourse is to burn down the entire house to rid himself of the memory. "You don't want to go to jail, do you? Where would I go? I would be stranded. I don't give a damn about myself, but hope that the idea will make him reconsider his actions." My beautiful dark prince stares at me for a moment, my words seeming to have rattled him.
"Call a cab now. Walk down to the end of the street. I'll make sure you're gone before I do anything.
His voice is clearer now than it should be, considering the amount of alcohol in his blood, but all I hear is him trying to give up on himself. I don't have any way to pay for a cab. I make a show of digging out my wallet and showing him my American currency. His eyes pinch closed, and he chucks the bottle against the wall. It shatters, but I barely flinch. I've seen and heard this too many times in the last 7 months to be shaken by it.
Take my goddamn wallet and get out. Fuck!
In one swift motion, he pulls his wallet from his back pocket and tosses it onto the floor before me. I bend down and shove it into my purse. No, I need you to come with me, I say softly.
You are so perfect. You know that, right?
He takes a step toward me and lifts his hand to cut my cheek. I flinch at the contact, and a deep frown sets on his beautifully tormented face.
Don't you know that? That you are perfect?
His hand is hot against my cheek, and his thumb begins to move across the skin. I can feel my lips trembling, but I keep a straight face. No, I'm not perfect, Harden. No one is. I quietly reply, my eyes staring into his.
You are. You're too perfect for me.
I want to cry. Are we back to this? I'm not going to let you push me away. I know what you're doing. You're drunk, and you are trying to justify this by comparing us. I'm just as fucked up as you.
Don't talk like that.
He frowns again. His other hand moves up to my jaw and pushes into my hair.
It doesn't sound right coming from that beautiful mouth.
His thumb runs along my bottom lip, and I can't help but notice the contrast between the way his eyes burn with dark pain and rage and his light, gentle touch. I love you, and I'm not going anywhere, I say, praying to break through his drunken haze. I search his eyes for any hint of my Harden.
If two people love each other, there can be no happy end to it,
he softly replies. Instantly recognizing the words, I tear my eyes from his. Don't quote Hemingway to me, I snap. Did he think I wouldn't recognize it and know what he was trying to do?
It's true, though. There's no happy ending. Not for me, anyway. I'm too fucked up.
He drops his hands from my face and turns away from me. No, you aren't. You...
Why do you do that?
He slurs, his body swaying back and forth.
Why do you always try to find the light in me? Wake up, Tessa. There isn't any fucking light,
he screams, and slams both of his hands against his chest.
I'm nothing. I'm a fucked up piece of shit with fucked up parents and a fucked up head. I tried to warn you. I tried to push you away before I destroyed you.
His voice gets lower, and he reaches into his pocket. I recognize the purple lighter as Judy's from the bar. Harden doesn't look at me as he strikes the flame. My parents are messed up, too. My father is in rehab, for God's sake, I shout back at him. I knew this would happen. I knew Christian's confession would be Harden's breaking point. One person can only handle so much, and Harden was already so fragile.
This is your last chance to go before this place burns to the ground,
he says without looking at me. You'd burn down the house with me in it? I choke out. I'm crying now, but I don't remember when I started.
No.
His boots are so loud as he crosses the room. My head is spinning, my heart is aching, and I'm afraid I've lost my sense of reality.
Come on.
He lifts his hand to me, asking me to take it. Give me the lighter.
Come here.
He holds both his arms to me. I'm full on sobbing now.
Please.
I force myself to ignore his familiar beckoning, no matter how much it hurts to do so. I want to run into his arms and take him away from here, but this is no Austen novel with a happy ending and good intentions. This is a Hemingway at best, and I can see right through his gesture. Give me the lighter, and we can leave together.
You almost had me believing that I could be normal.
The lighter still rests dangerously in his palm. No one is, I cry. No one is normal. I don't want you to be. I love you now. I love you and all of this. I look around the living room and back at Harden.
You couldn't. No one would or ever has. Not even my own mum.
As the words leave his lips, the sound of the door slamming against the wall makes me jump. I look toward the noise, and relief floods through me when Christian rushes into the living room. He's out of breath and panicked. He stops in his tracks when he takes in the state of the small room, liquor covering nearly every inch.
What?
Christian's eyes narrow at the lighter in Hardin's hand.
I heard sirens on my way here. We need to leave, now,
he shouts.
How did you...
Hardin looks back and forth between Christian and me.
You called him? Of course she did. What was she going to do? Let you burn the house down and get yourself arrested?
Christian yells. Hardin throws his hands in the air, still holding that lighter.
Get the fuck out. Both of you.
Christian turns to me.
Tessa, go outside.
But I stand my ground. No, I'm not leaving him in here. Has Christian not learned that Hardin and I shouldn't be separated?
Go,
Hardin says, taking a step toward me. He flicks his thumb across the metal of the lighter, igniting the flame.
Take her outside,
he slurs.
My car is parked in the alley across the street. Go to it and wait for us,
Christian instructs. When I look at Hardin, his eyes are set on the white flame, and I know him well enough to know that he's going to do this whether I leave or not. He's too intoxicated and too upset to stop now. A cold set of keys is placed into my hand, and Christian leans in close.
I'm not going to let anything happen to him.
After a moment of internal battle, I wrap my fingers around the keys and walk out the front door without looking back. I run across the street and pray that the sirens in the distance have another destination in mind.
Chapter 7. Hardin. As soon as Tessa runs out the front door, Vance starts waving his hands in front of him and yelling, "Go ahead! Go ahead! Go ahead!" What is he talking about? And why the fuck is he even here? I hate Tessa for calling him. I take that back. I could never hate her. But fuck, she pisses me off. No one wants you here, I say, my mouth numb as I speak to this man. My eyes are burning. Where is Tessa? Did she leave? I thought she did, but now I'm confused. How long ago did she come here? Was she even here to begin with? I don't know. Light the fire! Why? You want me to burn with the house? I ask. A younger version of him leaning against the mantle at my mum's house fills my mind. He was reading to me. Why was he reading to me? Did I say that out loud? I have no fucking idea. Present-day Vance stares at me, expecting something. All your mistakes would be gone if I were too. The metal on the lighter burns the rough skin on my thumb, but I continue to flick the lighter. No, I want you to burn the house down. Maybe then you can have some peace. I think he may be yelling at me, but I can barely see straight, let alone measure the volume of his voice. He's actually giving me his permission to burn this shit down. Who said I need fucking permission? Who are you to give me the okay? I didn't fucking ask you! I lower the flame down to the arm of the couch and wait for it to catch. I wait for the all-consuming fire to destroy this place. Nothing happens. I'm a real piece of work, yeah? I say to the man who claims to be my father. That's not going to work, he says. Or maybe I'm the one speaking. Hell if I know. I reach for an old magazine lying on top of one of the boxes and bring the flame to the corner of the pages. It ignites immediately. I watch the fire travel up the pages and toss the burning magazine onto the couch. I'm impressed by how quickly the fire swallows the couch, and I swear I can feel the fucking memories burning along with the piece of shit. The trail of rum is next. It's burning in a twisted line. My eyes can barely keep up with the flames as they dance across the floorboards, flicking and cracking, making the most comforting sounds. The colors are bright, fucking mad, and they angrily attack the rest of the room. Over the sound of the flames, Vance shouts, Are you satisfied? I don't know if I am. Tessa wouldn't be. She would be sad that I destroyed the house. Where is she? I ask, searching the room, which is blurry and filling with smoke. If she's in here and something happens to her... She's outside! She's safe! Vance assures me. Do I trust him? I fucking hate him. This is all his fault. Is Tessa still here? Is he lying? But then I realize Tessa is too smart for this. She'd already be gone. Away from this. Away from my destruction. And if this man had raised me, I wouldn't have become this bad a person. I wouldn't have hurt so many people. Especially Tessa. I never wanted to hurt her. But I always do. Where were you? I ask him. I wish the flames would grow. At their small size, the house will never burn completely. I may have stashed another bottle somewhere. I can't think clearly enough to remember. The fire doesn't feel big enough. The small flames don't match the size of my fucking anger, and I need more. I was at the hotel with Kimberly. Let's go before the fire department arrives, or you get yourself hurt. No! Where were you that night? The room is beginning to spin, and the heat is suffocating me. Vance seems genuinely shocked and stops, shifting completely upright. What? I wasn't even here, Harden! I was in America! I would never let something like that happen to your mom! But, Harden, we need to go! He yells. Why would we go? I want to watch this shit burn. Well, it happened anyway, I say, my body getting heavier and heavier. I should probably sit down, but if I have to play these images in my head, so does he. She was beaten to a bloody fucking pulp. Each of them had their way with her. They fucked her over and over and over. My chest hurts so fucking bad. I wish I could reach inside and yank everything out. Everything was easier before I met Tessa. Nothing could hurt me. Even this shit wouldn't hurt me like this. I'd learned to suppress it until she made me. She made me feel shit that I never wanted to. And now I can't seem to turn it off. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that happened. I would have stopped it. I look up and he's crying. How dare he fucking cry when he didn't have to watch it? He didn't have to see it each time he closed his eyes to sleep, year after year after year. Flashing blue lights pour through the windows, scatter across all the glass in the room, interrupting my bonfire. The sirens are fucking loud. Holy shit, they're loud. Get out! Vance shouts. Get out now! Go out the back door and get in my car! Go! He screams frantically. Fucking dramatics. Fuck you! I stumble. The room is spinning faster now and the sirens are piercing my ears. Before I can stop him, his hands are on me and he's pushing my drunken body back through the living room, into the kitchen, and out through the back. I try to push back, but my muscles refuse to cooperate. The cold air hits me, making me dizzy, and then my ass lands on the concrete. Go to the alley and get in my car! I think he says before he disappears. I scramble to my feet after falling over a few times and try to open the back kitchen door, but it's fucking locked. Inside I hear multiple voices, all shouting and something buzzing. What the fuck is that? I pull my phone from my pocket and see Tessa's name flashing across the screen. I can either go find his car in the alley and face her, or I can go inside and get arrested. I look at her blurry face on the screen, and the decision is made for me. I can't for the life of me figure out how the fuck I'm going to get across the street without the cops spotting me. The screen on my phone is duplicated and shifting, but somehow I managed to dial Tess's number.
Harden, are you all right?
She cries into the speaker. Pick me up at the end of the street, in front of the cemetery. I left the latch on the neighbor's gate and end the call. At least I don't have to go through Mike's yard. Did he marry my mum today? For his sake, I hope not.
You wouldn't want her to be alone forever. I know you love her. She's still your mother.
Tessa's voice rings through my head. Great. Now I'm hearing voices.
I'm not perfect. No one is.
Her sweet voice reminds me. She's wrong, though. She's so very wrong, and naive, and perfect. I managed to find myself standing at the corner of my mum's street. The cemetery behind me is dark. The only light is coming from the flashing blues in the distance. The black Beamer pulls up moments later, and Tessa stops in front of me. I climb into the car without a word, and the door is barely closed before she floors the gas pedal.
Where should I go?
Her voice is hoarse, and she's trying to stop sobbing, but she's failing miserably.
I don't know. There aren't many.
My eyes are heavy.
Places here, it's night and late, and there's nothing open.
I close my eyes, and everything fades away. The sound of sirens startles me awake. I jump at the loud noise, and my head slams against the roof of the car.
Car? Why the fuck am I in a car?
I look over and find Tessa sitting in the driver's seat, her eyes closed and her legs curled up against her body. I'm instantly reminded of a sleepy kitten. My head is fucking killing me. I drank way too fucking much. It's daylight. The sun is hiding behind the clouds, leaving the sky grey and dreary. The clock on the dashboard informs me that it's 10 minutes until 7. I don't recognize the parking lot we are parked in, and I try to remember how the hell I got in the car in the first place. There are no police cars or sirens now. I must have been dreaming them in my sleep. My head is throbbing, and when I pull my shirt up to wipe my face, the thick smell of smoke invades my nostrils. Flickers of a burning couch and Tessa crying play through my mind. I struggle to put them together. I'm still half drunk. Beside me, Tessa stirs and her eyes flutter before opening. I don't know what she saw last night. I don't know what I said or did, but I do know that the way she's looking at me right now makes me wish I would have burned with that house. Images of my mum's house flash through my mind. Tessa, I don't know what to say to her. My mind isn't working, and neither is my fucking mouth. Judy's bleached hair and Christian pushing me out the back door of my mum's house fill some of the gaps in my memory.
Are you okay?
Tessa's tone is soft and rough at the same time. I can tell she has nearly lost her voice. She's asking me if I'm okay. I search her face, confused by her question.
Yeah? Are you?
I may not remember most of the night. Hell, the day or night. But I know she should be upset with me. She nods slowly, her eyes performing the same searching that mine are.
I'm trying to remember. The cops came.
I sift through the memories as they come.
The house was burning. Where are we?
I look out the window, trying to figure it out.
We are... Well, I'm not really sure where we are.
She clears her throat and looks straight ahead through the windshield. She must have been screaming a lot, or crying, or both, because she can barely speak.
I didn't know where to go, and you fell asleep, so I just kept driving. But I was so tired, I had to pull off the road eventually.
Her eyes are bloodshot and swollen. Black makeup is smeared underneath them, and her lips are dry and cracked. She's barely recognizable. Still beautiful, but I've drained her. Looking at her right now, I can see the lack of warmth in her cheeks, the loss of hope from her eyes. the missing happiness from her full lips. I took a beautiful girl who lives her life for others, a girl who always found the good in everything, even me, and turned her into a shell whose void eyes are staring back at me now. I'm going to be sick! I choke out and yank the passenger door open. All of the whiskey, all of the rum, and all of my mistakes splatter against the concrete. And I repeatedly vomit until I'm left with nothing but my guilt. Chapter 8. Harden. Tessa's voice comes through soft and raspy in the gaps between my harsh breathing.
Where should I go?
I don't know. Part of me wants to tell her to get on the next plane out of London, alone. But the selfish and much stronger part knows that if she did, I wouldn't make it through the night without drinking myself sick. Again. My mouth tastes like vomit, and my throat burns from the brutal way my system expelled all that liquor. Opening the center console between us, Tessa pulls out a napkin and begins to wipe the corners of my mouth with the rough paper. Her fingers barely touch my skin, and I flinch away at the icy cold. You're freezing. Turn the car on. But I don't wait for her to oblige. Instead, I lean across and turn the key myself, blasting the air from the vents. The air is cold at first, but this expensive-ass car has some trick to it, and warmth quickly spreads through the small space.
We need to get gas. I don't know how long I was driving, but the fuel light is on, and that screen says so too.
She points to the lavish navigation screen on the dash. The sound of her voice is killing me. You've lost your voice, I say, even though it's incredibly obvious. She nods and turns her head away from me. My fingers wrap around her chin, and I turn her face back to me. If you want to leave, I won't blame you. I'll take you to the airport right now. She gives me a puzzled look before opening her mouth.
You're staying here, in London. Our flight is tonight, I thought.
The last word voice comes out as more of a squeak than anything else, and she breaks into a coughing fit. I check the cup holders for some water or something, but they're empty. I rub her back until she stops coughing. Then I change the subject. Trade me places. I'll drive over there. I nod toward the filling station across the road. You need water and something for your throat. I wait for her to move out of the driver's seat, but she rakes her eyes over my face before shifting the car into drive and pulling out of the parking lot.
You're still over the legal limit,
she finally whispers, careful not to strain her non-existent voice. I can't exactly argue with that. There is no way that a few hours of dozing in this car has sobered me completely. I drank enough liquor to black out most of the night, and the resulting headache is massive. I'll probably be drunk for the entire fucking day, or half of it. I can't tell. I can't even remember how many drinks I had. My jumbled counting is cut short when Tessa parks in front of a gas pump and reaches for the door handle. I'll go in. I climb out of the car before she can argue. There aren't many people inside at this early hour, only men dressed for work. My hands are filled with aspirin, water bottles, and bags of snacks when Tessa walks into the small store. I watch as every head turns to look at the disheveled beauty in her dirty white dress. The men's looks make me even more nauseated. Why didn't you stay in the car? I ask as she approaches. She waves a hunk of black leather in front of my face.
Your wallet.
Oh. Handing it to me, she disappears for a moment, but takes her place next to me just as I reach the counter. In each hand is a large, steaming cup of coffee. I drop my pile of things on the counter. Can you check the location on your phone while I pay? I ask, taking the oversized cups from her small hands.
What?
The location on your phone, so we can see where we are. Grabbing the aspirin bottle and shaking it before he scans it, the portly man behind the counter remarks, All Hallows, That's where you are. He nods at Tessa, who politely smiles back.
Thank you.
She widens her grin, and the poor bastard flushes. Yeah, I know she's hot. Now look away before I rip your eyes from your head, I want to tell him. And next time you make a god-awful noise when I'm hungover, like you did with that aspirin bottle, it's all over. After last night, I could use the outlet. And I'm not in the mood for this mopey shit's eyes to be raking across my girl's chest at 7 in the fucking morning. If I weren't immensely aware of the lack of emotion behind her eyes, I would probably have pulled him over the counter. But her fake smile, black-rimmed eyes, and dirt-stained dress stop me and yank me from my violent thoughts. She just looks so lost, so sad, so fucking lost. What have I done to you? I silently ask. Her focus shifts to the door, where a young woman and child are entering, hand in hand. I watch her as she watches them, following their movements a little too closely, if you ask me. It's borderline creepy. When the little girl stares up at her mum, Tessa's bottom lip trembles. What the hell is that about? Because I threw a fit over the new revelation in my family. The clerk has packed up all of my stuff and holds the bag somewhat rudely in front of my face to get my attention. It seems that as soon as Tessa stopped looking at him, he decided he could be rude to me. I snatch the plastic bag and lean toward Tessa. Ready? I ask, nudging her with my elbow.
Yeah, sorry,
she mutters, and grabs the coffees from the counter. I fill the car up, all the while considering the consequences of driving Vance's rental into the sea. If we're in All Hallows, we're right next to the shore. It wouldn't be hard.
How far are we from Gabriel's bar?
Tessa asks when I join her in the car.
That's where the car is.
Only about 1.5 hours, traffic considering. The car slowly sinks in the ocean, costing Vance tens of thousands. We take a cab to Gabriel's for 200. Fair trade. Tessa twists the top off the small bottle of aspirin and shakes 3 of them into my hand, then frowns and stares down at her screen, which has started to light up.
Do you want to talk about last night? I just received a text from Kimberly.
Questions begin pushing through the muddied images and voices from last night and into the surface of my mind. Vance locking me outside and walking back into the burning house. As Tessa continues to stare at her phone, I grow increasingly worried. He's not... I don't know how to ask the question. It won't seem to pass over the lump in my throat. Tessa looks at me, and her eyes begin to fill with tears.
He's alive, of course, but...
What? He's what?
She says he was burned.
A slight and unwelcome pain tries to seep through the cracks in my defenses, cracks that she caused in the first place. She wipes one eye with the back of her hand.
Only on one leg. Kim said one leg, and that he's to be arrested as soon as he is released from the hospital, which should be soon, any minute, really.
Arrested for what? I know the answer before she gives it.
He told the police that he started the fire.
Tessa lifts her shitty phone in front of my face, so I can read the long text message from Kimberly for myself. I read it all, not learning anything new, but getting a good sense of Kimberly's panic. I don't say anything. I have nothing to say.
Well?
Tessa asks softly. Well, what?
Aren't you even slightly concerned about your father?
Then taking in my murderous glare, she adds,
I mean, Christian.
He's hurt because of me. He shouldn't have even showed up there. Tessa looks appalled by my nonchalance.
Harden! That man came there to help me, to help you.
Sensing the beginning of a rambling spell, I interrupt her. Tessa, I know. but she surprises me by holding a hand up to silence me.
I wasn't finished. Not to mention he took the blame for a house fire that you caused and was injured. I love you, and I know you hate him right now, but I know you, the real you. So don't sit here and act like you don't give a shit what happens to him, because I know damn well that you do.
Violent coughing punctuates her angry speech, and I push the water bottle to her mouth. I take a moment to mull over her words as she settles her cough. She's right. Of course she is. But I'm not ready to face any of the things that she just mentioned. I'm not fucking ready to admit that he did something for me. Not after all these years. I'm not ready for him to suddenly be a fucking father to me. Fuck no. I don't want anyone, especially him, to think that this somehow evens the score. That I will somehow forget all of the shit he missed. All of the nights I spent listening to my parents screaming at one another. All of the times I rushed up the stairs at the sound of my father's drunken voice. The way he knew and didn't tell me all the while. No. Fuck that. It's not fucking even, and it never will be. You think because he gets a little burn on his leg and chooses to take the blame that I will forgive him? I run my hands through my hair. I'm supposed to just forgive him for lying to me for 21 fucking years? I ask, my voice much louder than I intended it to be.
No, of course not, she says,
raising her voice right back at me. I worry that she might blow out a vocal cord or something, but she goes right on.
But I refuse to allow you to brush this off as some small thing he did. He is going to jail for you, and you act as if you couldn't be bothered to even ask how he is. Absent, lying, father or not, he loves you, and he saved your ass last night. This is bullshit. Whose side are you fucking on? There aren't any sides, she shouts,
her voice echoing in the small space and not helping my ringing headache one bit.
Everyone is on your side, Harden. I know you feel like it's you against the world, but look around you. You have me, your father, both of them. Karen, who loves you as her own, and Landon, who loves you much more than either of you will ever admit.
Tessa half smiles at the mention of her best friend, but continues her lecture.
Kimberly may challenge you, but she cares for you too. And Smith, you are literally the only person that little boy likes.
She gathers my hands in her shaking ones and rubs her thumbs across my palms in gentle caresses.
It's ironic, really. The man who hates the world is most loved by it,
she whispers, her eyes glossy and full of tears. Tears for me. So many tears for me. Baby. I pull her over to my seat, and she straddles my waist. Her arms lock around my neck. You selfless girl. I bury my face in her neck, almost trying to hide in her messy hair.
Let everyone in, Harden. Life is much easier when you do.
She rubs my head like that of some pet, but I fucking love it. I nuzzle farther into her.
It's not that easy.
My throat burns, and I feel like the only breath I can catch is when I'm breathing in her scent. It's clouded by the faint smell of smoke and fire that I've seemed to smother the car in, but still calming.
I know.
She continues to run her hands over my hair, and I want to believe her. Why is she always so understanding when I don't deserve her to be? The honking of a horn brings me out of my hiding place and reminds me we're at the gas pumps. Apparently the man in the truck behind us doesn't appreciate being held up one bit. Tessa climbs off my lap and buckles herself in the passenger seat. I consider keeping the car parked here just to be a dick, but I hear Tessa's stomach rumble, causing me to reconsider. When was the last time she ate? That I can't remember tells me it's been too long. I pull away from the pumps and pull into the empty lot across the street where we slept last night. Eat something, I push a breakfast bar into her hands. I pull to the back of the lot, close to a cluster of trees, and turn the heat on. It's spring now, but the morning air is crisp and Tessa is shivering. I put an arm around her and gesture as if offering her the world. We could go to Haworth, see Bronte country. I could show you the moors. She surprises me by laughing. What? I raise my brow at her and bite into a banana muffin.
After the night you had, she clears her throat. You're talking about taking me to the moors.
She shakes her head and reaches for her steaming coffee. I shrug, chewing thoughtfully. I don't know.
How far is the drive?
She asks, a lot less enthusiastic than I thought she would be. Granted, if this weekend hadn't turned into complete shit, she'd probably be more excited. I promised to take her to Chawton, too, but the moors seem much more fitting to my mood right now. 4 hours or so to Haworth.
That's a long drive,
she muses and sips at her coffee. I thought you would want to go. My tone is harsh.
I would.
I can clearly tell that something about my suggestion is troubling her. Fuck, when am I not creating trouble behind those grey eyes? Why are you complaining about a drive, then? I finish off the muffin and rip open another. She looks slightly offended, but her voice remains soft and raspy.
I'm just wondering why you would want to drive all the way to Haworth to see the moors.
She tucks a strand of hair behind her ear and takes a deep breath.
Harden, I know you enough to know when you're brooding and withdrawing from me.
She unbuckles her seatbelt and shifts her body to face me.
You wanting to take me to the moors that inspired Wuthering Heights, rather than some place from an Austen novel, has me on edge more than I already am.
She can see right through my bullshit.
How does she always do that?
No, I lie. I was simply thinking you would like to see the moors and Bronte country. Sue me. I roll my eyes to avoid that damn look in hers, not willing to admit that she's right. Her fingers play with the wrapper of a breakfast bar.
Well, I'd rather not go there, really. I just want to go home.
I let out a deep breath and grab the bar from her hands, tearing open the wrapper. You need to eat something. You look like you'll pass out any moment.
I feel that way,
she says quietly, more to herself than me, it seems. I'm considering shoving the damned thing into her mouth when she takes it from me for a bite. You want to go home, then? I finally ask her, not wanting to ask where exactly home will be for her. She grimaces.
Yes, your father was right. London isn't as I imagined.
I ruined it for you, that's why. She doesn't deny it, but she doesn't confirm it either. Her silence and the way she's vacantly staring out at the trees pushes me to say what I need to say. It's now or never. I think I should stay here for a while, I say into the open air between us. Tessa's mouth stops its chewing, and she turns, narrowing her eyes at me.
Why?
It doesn't make sense for me to go back there.
No, it doesn't make sense for you to stay here. Why would you even consider that?
Her feelings are hurt, just like I knew they would be. But what other choice do I have? Because my father isn't my actual father. My mum is a lying... I stop myself from calling her the name I want to. And my biological father is going to jail because I caught her house on fire. It's a ridiculous drama series on its own. Then, to try to get a reaction out of her, I wryly add, all we need is a cast of young girls with too much makeup and impractical clothes, and we would have a hit. Her sad eyes study mine.
I'm still not seeing why any of this would make you want to stay here. Here, as in away from me. That's what you want, isn't it? You want to be away from me.
She says the last part as if saying it aloud verifies it as truth. It's not that. I start, but stumble. I don't know how to put my thoughts into words. That's always been my biggest fucking problem. I just think if we had some time apart, you could see what I'm doing to you. Just look at yourself. She flinches, but I force myself to continue. You are dealing with problems that you would have never been faced with if it wasn't for me.
Don't you dare act like you're doing this for me, she snaps, her voice as cold as ice. You are as self-destructive as they come, and that's your only motive behind this.
I am. I know I am. It's what I do. I hurt other people, and then I hurt myself before anyone can hurt me back. I'm fucked up. That's just the way it is.
You know what?
She says, after getting tired of waiting for me to speak up.
Fine. I'll let you hurt both of us in this self-depriving mission of your...
My hands are on her hips, and she's back on my lap before she can finish. Tessa tries to climb off me, scratching at my arms when I won't let her move an inch.
If you don't want to be with me, then get off of me!
She seethes. No tears, only anger. Her anger I can handle. It's the tears that kill me. The anger drives them away.
Stop fighting me!
I gather both of her wrists behind her back and hold them in only one of my hands. She glares, her eyes warning me.
You don't get to do this every time something makes you feel bad. You don't get to decide that I'm too good for you,
she shouts in my face. I ignore her and bring my mouth to the curve of her neck. Her body jolts again, this time out of pleasure, not anger.
Stop it,
she says with absolutely no conviction. She's trying to deny me because she thinks she should, but we both know that this is what we need. We need the physical connection that brings us to an emotional depth that neither of us can explain or deny. I suck at the tender skin at the base of her neck, reveling in the way it turns pink from the suction of my lips. I continue to suck and nibble at the skin, just enough to create a cluster of markings, but not hard enough to make them stay for longer than a few seconds.
You sure aren't acting like it.
Her voice is thick, and her eyes follow my free hand as it moves across her exposed thigh. Her dress is bunched up at her waist in the most maddening way possible.
Everything I do is because I love you, even the stupid shit.
I reach the lace of her panties, and she gasps when I run a single finger across the moisture already collected between her thighs.
Always so wet for me, even now.
I slide her panties over and push two fingers into her wet flesh. She whimpers and arches her back against the steering wheel, and I feel her body relaxing. I move the seat back farther to give us more room inside the small car.
You can't distract me with...
I remove my fingers from her and plunge them back in, stopping the words before they can fall from her lips.
Yes, baby, I can.
I bring my lips to her ear.
Will you stop fighting me if I let your hands go?
She nods. The second I let them go, they move to my hair. Her fingers bury into the thick mess of my hair, and I tug the front of her dress down with one hand. Her white lace bra is sinful despite its holy coloring. Tessa, whose blonde hair and white ensemble contrast in the most extreme manner with my dark hair and dark clothes. Something about the contrast is so fucking erotic. The ink on my wrist as my fingers disappear inside her again. The clean, unmarked skin of her thighs. The way her soft moans and whimpers fill the air as my eyes drag shamelessly up her tight stomach and back to her chest. I tear my eyes away from her perfect tits, long enough to scan the parking lot. The windows are tinted, but I want to be sure we are still alone on this side of the street. I unfasten her bra using one hand and slow the movement of my other. She whines in protest, but I don't bother to hide the smile on my face.
Please,
she begs for me to continue.
Please what? Tell me what you want.
I coax her, the way I have since the beginning of our relationship. It has always felt like unless she spoke the words aloud, They couldn't be true. She couldn't possibly want me the way I want her. She reaches down and pushes my hand back between her thighs.
Touch me.
She's swollen and waiting and fucking soaking, wanting me, needing me. And I fucking love her more than she could ever comprehend. I need this. I need her to distract me, to help me escape all of this bullshit, even if only for a little while. I give her what she wants, and she moans my name in approval, taking her lip between her teeth. Her hand moves under mine to grip me through my jeans. I'm so hard that it hurts, and Tessa's touches and squeezes aren't helping. I want to fuck you. Now. I have to. I glide my tongue over one of her breasts. She nods, her eyes rolling back in her head, and I suck at the sensitive tip while kneading its twin with the hand that isn't between her legs.
Hard,
she groans. Her hands are eager to free me from my jeans and boxers. I lift my hips enough for her to tug my jeans down my thighs. My fingers are still buried in her, moving at a tender pace, just enough to drive her fucking crazy. I remove my fingers from her and bring them to her swollen lips, pressing them into her mouth. She sucks at them, her tongue running slowly up and down my fingers, and I groan, quickly withdrawing them before